This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
The transfer portal is officially open for business. Where is your roster looking at right now? Are they looking to add? Are they hoping to hang on to some of their top guys? Is one of your top guys already in the transfer portal or announced that he's intending to enter the portal? This thing is buzzing right now, man. College football is a year-round sport, and the second portal window is the best example of that. We're glad to have y'all here. It is April 16th, 2024, the last one on the face of the planet. I just mentioned the portal is open for business, and we have got the authority source on all things transfer portal, Pete Nakos, joining the show here in, give or take, 30 or so minutes. We put Pete towards the back end of the show because by nature of how this whole thing has run since it's existed, the portal that is, I don't think we're going to have a quiet morning when it comes to this portal. So glad to have you all along for the ride, man. Like I said, we got portal latest, portal intel stacked within the show. The spring games, the first round of spring games, rather, were played this past Saturday. You had spring games in Athens, Georgia. You had Coral Gables, Florida. You had Gainesville, Florida. You had Alabama with their A-Day. A lot of spring games being played. And another round of spring games coming up here this upcoming weekend that we'll talk about on Sunday. But what did we learn from that first round of spring games? And spring games are always a little bit tricky because the best way I can describe this is you're looking for symptoms, right? You're looking for symptoms of what your team might end up being in the fall. It's 15 practices. A lot of these teams have new faces. A lot of these teams will have new faces when they get to the fall. But what can we gauge? What can we learn from that first round of spring games? Got a couple of thoughts on that. Also, when it comes to a team that had their spring game this past Saturday, I mentioned Alabama already, man. I had my questions about Jalen Milroe. I had my questions about how he would fit in Kalen DeBoer's system. But I'm telling you, man, after visiting Tuscaloosa, after seeing the A-Day, I think he's set for a massive 2024. I really do. So we'll talk about that here in a minute. Also, Ohio State, their quarterback room is loaded, for lack of a better term. They're stacked in that quarterback room. A lot of guys that could probably go play somewhere tomorrow. Where do things stand right now? Because Will Howard transferred in from Kansas State during that first portal window, but he hasn't been named the starter. Devin Brown, I thought, looked pretty solid in that spring game. Julian Sands coming on strong during that spring. Had a lackluster spring game. Had a very freshman-esque spring game. So where do things stand out there in Columbus? We got some thoughts on that. Also, to finish out the show, man, what are the toxic traits of us as college football fans? Like, we're not above reproach here on this show. We have a fair amount of self-awareness, I like to think, when it comes to our own faults and our own blind spots. We'll talk about that together and have some fun here towards the end of this thing. But like I said, man, we're glad to have you all a part of this, man. It's college football every single day of the year right here on this platform, the On3 YouTube channel, right here on this show, The Hard Count. So if you're new, you're finding us because of the beautiful thing that is Portal Monday, Portal Tuesday, whatever it is today, round two. We're glad to have you. Make sure you're subscribed. Let's lock in. Let's have a phenomenal, phenomenal spring portal window. Let's start right there, man. The transfer portal, as I mentioned at the top of this show, is open for business. Names are continuing to file in as I'm even having words come out of my mouth. But what are some of the big names that we need to take note of, and what's the latest intel on some of those big names that we already knew were going to enter the portal? Dallin Hayden, running back at Ohio State, took a look around that room, saw Quinshon Judkins enter in from that first spring portal window, or from that first transfer portal window, rather, pre-spring. Went through spring practice. Travion Henderson is 1,000-yard back when he's healthy, and he's like, listen, man, I want to get some carries. I want to have a chance to kind of be the guy, you'd have to believe. So he has since entered the transfer portal, and per On3 Steve Wiltfong, keep your head on a swivel for the Fong bombs this time of year, he's heard from a couple of schools, Colorado, Auburn, Louisville, UCLA, Virginia Tech, and Georgia Tech. I don't expect that to be the only schools that he hears from. Auburn's an interesting one that jumps out to me because in the SEC and in Hugh Freeze's offense, you need depth at the running back position. You got Jarquez Hunter, but what if he goes down? What if he has the wear and tear that you expect throughout the course of a full season in the SEC? You need to be at least two, maybe three deep in Auburn's running back room. And Dallin Hayden, man, I mean, he didn't have a ton of playing time last season, but We've seen him have a lot of success at different points throughout his career at Ohio State. He's had multiple games where he's filled in for injured backs in that room and had over 100 yards against Big Ten opponents. So Dallin Hayden, name to keep an eye on. There's the schools that he's hearing from. Auburn's the one that I'm watching most closely there, just from an intrigue and from a fit standpoint. Speaking of fit, Penn State needs to, in my opinion, be on the attack mode when it comes to adding wide receivers in the portal. They took a step backwards with Keandre Lambert-Smith entering the transfer portal yesterday as a grad transfer. The reason why it's such a massive loss for Penn State is because Keandre Lambert-Smith, from where I'm sitting, was your most explosive weapon offensively. He averaged 12 yards a catch last year. Y'all, Penn State as an offense, averaged 6.5 yards a pass. Good for like 80-something in the country. Not great. So if you want to maximize Drew Aller and his arm talent, and all that he has under the hood, you got to have somebody that can put some pressure on those safeties, lighten the box for those running backs, and just have a balanced offense. They didn't have that last year, and they're taking, again, a step backwards now, losing the most explosive offensive weapon in Keandre Lambert-Smith. I expect him to have a pretty solid market as this thing starts to take shape. Really excited to hear from Pete Nakos on Keandre Lambert-Smith and who's all in his sweepstakes so far, because I think that's one of the bigger fish that's available right now. Experienced guy, 38-game starter, production that speaks for itself. Really think he's going to have a pretty solid market. Last night, this news broke. Tennessee linebacker Elijah Herring plans to enter the portal. By the time you're watching this, he might already be in there. He led the team last year for Tennessee with 80 tackles, started 11 games. Now, there's sort of two ways you feel about this if you're a Tennessee fan. On one hand, that was a productive dude for you last year with 2 years of eligibility remaining. Never good to lose production like that from your roster. On the other side of things, there's probably some folks in Knoxville that think, okay, well, we're pretty stacked at the linebacker position. Does Elijah Herring have the season that he had in 2023 if we don't experience a little bit of some injury in that department? You know, we'll never know. But at the end of the day, I think he's going to have a pretty solid market because Pete Nakos put out a portal primer yesterday on the On3 website, so On3.com, so check that out. Make sure you're tuned in there. But in his primer, he talks about some positions that will be in high demand during the spring portal window, and one of those positions he mentioned explicitly was linebacker. So Elijah Herring, we'll see what his market looks like, but from the looks of things, it'll be pretty solid as we sit here early on in this transfer portal cycle. Georgia running back Andrew Paul, he's going to hit the portal. From the outside looking in, you'd have to believe it's just a crowded room, kind of a similar situation with Dallin Hayden. You got Trevor Etienne in there. You got Roderick Robinson, who's in there, who looks like a creative player. And Andrew Paul has 3 years of eligibility left, was a very high-profile recruit. Says, okay, I probably want to see the field a little bit sooner rather than later. So he's 5'11", 218 pounds, really solid running back physically. I love the way that he runs the football and gets downhill. The thing with him is, I think when you talk about the excitement at Georgia around that running back room, Andrew Paul was typically a name that got mentioned in that conversation. And when he was mentioned, it was usually in regards to depth. Because I think Andrew Paul leaving Georgia today, Georgia fans are like, that's a bummer, we wish him well. But in November, when you got X amount of players dinged up and you got some running backs that are feeling the wear and tear of a season, that's when you're like, man, I wish we had kept Andrew Paul on our roster. We'll see what his market is. The interesting thing here, too, to mention, he's transferring from an SEC school. Quick refresher here for those of y'all that have been tuned into the portal coverage. You cannot transfer in this second window that we're in, unless you're a grad transfer, from an SEC school to another SEC school. So if you're Tennessee and you're looking for a running back, Andrew Paul, you can't take him because he's transferring from Georgia. The backup quarterback market is gaining a little bit of buzz. Jacoby Criswell started his career at North Carolina, was at Arkansas last year where he drew rave reviews behind closed doors with his arm talent, former four-star recruit. He's entered the portal. Wisconsin quarterback, who was previously in Oklahoma, Nick Evers, is a guy who I thought was really impressive coming out of high school, also a four-star recruit. He's got 3 years of eligibility. He's hitting the open market, and we'll see where both those guys end up. We said this a lot on this show. There were a lot of people trying to tell you, hey, this portal season is going to be crazy, going to be chaos, going to be the most chaotic portal season we've seen to this point in its existence. I'm not telling you that it won't be chaotic. I'm not telling you it won't be crazy. But I think there was maybe this thought out there that the college football public was led to believe, hey, the five percenters of college football rosters, those All-American kind of guys, they're going to hit the portal. And you're going to have to fend for yourself. Will it be crazy? I think by the looks of how we're trending right now, yeah, it's probably going to be crazy. There's going to be a little bit of chaos going on. That's true. Will it be your five percenters? No, I don't think so. Now, to be fair, there is some more runway for this portal to heat up a little bit more. I think what you're going to see is this second round of spring games is going to happen. Guys are going to try to put some money on tape, to use an NFL draft term, for wherever their next destination could be. Go out, ball, have a good spring game, help your market value, and then hit the portal. So this time next week, we could be talking about another wave of names that end up impacting this whole thing. But what I think is important for us to mention here is this transfer portal window, again, not going to be the five percenters. You're not going to feel it so much in August. But I think when you will feel the impact of this portal will be November. This is very much so a depth and beefing up your roster kind of season right now. Because, again, Andrew Paul, perfect example. Right now, Georgia fans, disappointed he's leaving. That's a good back. He would have helped our depth. Doesn't matter so much against Clemson as much as it's going to matter late in the year when you're playing in Atlanta for the SEC championship and you got a couple of backs that are dinged up. You're saying, man, I wish we had Andrew Paul. So November, December, late October, that's what this portal cycle I think is really going to feed into. I don't think it's you're going to go and fix your quarterback position right away, go and get your star All-American guy that didn't get the money he wanted, so now he's in the portal. One more time, I'll say this. We've said it on different shows. I'll say it again for those of y'all that are just finding us. We're glad to have y'all here. Make sure you're subscribed. The reason why you're not seeing the five percenters hit the portal right now, and when I say five percenters, I'm speaking to the top 5% of college football rosters from a talent perspective. The reason why you're not seeing them jump in the portal is because they don't have to hit the portal to find out what they're worth. If I am an All-American quarterback and I'm not happy with my current situation and I want to know what kind of market I have for myself, I can go and talk to my trainer, my agent. There's some kind of back channel I can work to talk to a coach and say, okay, I want to make sure I get what I'm worth. What can X school offer me? Again, I can have all these conversations through back channels before I even hit the portal. So you don't see All-American quarterback A and his name go intends to enter the portal with the Hayes Fawcett graphic or Pete Nakos breaking it. It doesn't happen. It happens behind closed doors, and we never even catch wind of it from a public view. So with that being said, those things get handled. The other school I would have to believe that All-American quarterback A plays at says, okay, that's the number they're offering you. We're going to match that. Never even becomes something that hits the Twitter sphere. So top five percenters, no. Crazy, yes. Depth is the key word for this portal season. Portal season, man. It's a wild time. It's a very, very wild time. And again, Pete Nakos is going to join the show here in right around 23 or so minutes. We're going to keep a good pulse for what's going on in the world of the portal as I'm checking my socials to make sure no craziness broke as we're on the air. Caden Proctor, for those of y'all that are tuned in live right now, surprise, surprise, he has officially entered the transfer portal, and per his social media has given every indication that he will transfer back to Alabama, which is where he played all season last year as a true freshman, and that's a very big pickup for Kalen DeBoer and company. So spring games, we had a nice little round this past Saturday. We got another little buffet this upcoming Saturday. These are the two big spring game weekends. If you've been subscribed to the On3 YouTube channel, we got immediate reactions for you Sunday morning. We watch all the games. We get in here Sunday, give or take, like 7 a.m., and we just rattle off all of our instant reactions to have that ready for you. So if you're new, welcome. Make sure you're subscribed. Yes, we talk about spring football games here. Yes, we're a little bit sick in the head for college football, and you're tuned into a college football show during the month of April. We deserve each other. So let's keep a good thing rolling. Now, speaking of spring game learnings from this past Saturday, I want to start in Gainesville, Florida. Because I went on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday, and I talked with him a little bit about some of these SEC spring games, and Florida's one that we mentioned. And I said this. I was like, I really believe that I'm probably one of the last people on this branch, and I'm totally fine with that. I'm not leaving Florida for dead. The over-under win total, call it what you want to. Last year, call it what you want to. Say what you want about Billy Napier and the temperature of his seat or whatever. I think Florida is in a lot better position to be successful than folks want to believe. Now, the schedule was the Hunger Games, so we'll talk about that when it comes time to talk about that. But from the spring game itself, it is very obvious this offense is going to run through Trey Wilson. You might know him as Eugene Wilson. I call him Trey Wilson. Bottom line, get number 3 of the football is pretty much how they're going to operate this upcoming season. He had 11 targets in the spring football game. Spring games, more often than not, are you get the starters a little bit of burn, get them a couple targets, get them out of the game, evaluate your depth. Trey Wilson, on a what would have been for most places a light work kind of day, he got 11 targets, over 100 yard receiving, caught a long touchdown, got you fired up if you're a Gator fan. That's important in the SEC. You got to have a fastball. You got to have some explosivity offensively, something that I don't think Florida's really had a ton of in the last couple of seasons outside of Anthony Richardson, to have a real playmaker on the outside like a Trey Wilson. Ricky Pearsall was great last year. Do they have somebody else to go with Trey Wilson to maximize Trey Wilson's abilities? Because if you can just key on number 3, that might, you know, not age as well as you would like it to in Gainesville in terms of your offensive game plan. Footnote for you from the Florida spring game, I think the defense looks improved. And I think Florida fans probably feel a lot like Rod Wave. You know, your heart been broke so many times, you don't know exactly what to believe. You're like, I don't want to be optimistic about our defense, JD. I don't want to believe something that's going to end up breaking my heart when we play games in October. I hear you. But I think when you look at that spring game, it's okay to feel some optimism. It's okay to be excited about your young dog and pup Howard transferring over from South Carolina and having a pretty decent spring game and having a lead tackle number that tied for the high of the game with 6. So all in all, they'll be better personnel-wise if you're a Florida fan. Excuse me. If you're a Florida fan, I think it's okay to draw some optimism from that. We'll stay in the SEC. Georgia, the Death Star out there in Athens, is fully operational. We are more than fine pounding this drum for the entirety of this spring and all the way into the fall, because I'm telling you right now, from a roster perspective, from an experience perspective, there is not a better team in America than the Georgia Bulldogs. It's spring. That's a pretty definitive statement to make, but I think the spring game, did the offense look incredible? No, but I think the roster overall provided enough to hold you over to get you excited for the fall. Going back to my point, the Death Star that is the Georgia roster is operational. That defense, they lose some production for sure, but those young bucks, man, CJ Allen being one of them, he's going to be very good in Athens for a very long time, as long as he wears that G on his helmet. The offense is the big thing I want to focus on. Very obvious what Trevor Etienne brings to the table here. A little bit of a burst out of the backfield, both running and catching the football. Carson Beck has some more tools to throw the ball to. Colby Young, transfer wide receiver from Miami. They threw him a 50-50 ball. He went up and got it. It was a thing of beauty. Got the crowd fired up. Dominic Lovett looks like he's going to be wide receiver 1 for them in terms of production. You lose Ladd McConkey. You lose Brock Bowers. Dom Lovett now being able to build on what he did last year in terms of understanding of the offense, chemistry with Carson Beck, that's going to pay off. He had a massive spring game, had over 100 yards receiving, and had a touchdown catch in the back corner where he like pinned it against the defender with one hand. They both ran into the fence. It looked very painful, but it tied the game up. It was clutch. It was a dime from Carson Beck, and Dom Lovett is a name that I think a lot of fans in Athens are getting fired up about right now. Very, very complete is Georgia as we sit here in the spring. Speaking of complete, man, Ohio State defensively, they're very complete. We're going to talk about the quarterback room a little bit later in the show, but that Buckeye defense, man, you already brought back most of the main characters from that unit that was like top 10, top 5 in the country a season ago. JT Tuimoloau, Jack Sawyer up front, they're trench monsters. Davison Igbinosum is just, I mean, a definition of what a modern college football corner is supposed to look like with how lanky he is. You add in the best player from the transfer portal, Caleb Downs from Alabama. If you were trying to eval the offense and trying to eval the quarterback position, it's a tough day to do so. One, because the wind was bad. But two, that secondary pretty much put a lid on things the whole day and said we're not allowing any big plays. We're not allowing any highlight plays outside of, I guess, Emeka Ebuka having a nice little one-handed catch. Basically, what I'm trying to tell you is they forced check down after check down after check down, and that was pretty much the story of the day if you were watching the first team offense. So all I'm trying to say here is they're going to be elite yet again. So you can bank on that Ohio State defense. If it takes a while for the quarterback position to solidify, you're in good shape on defense holding it down on that side of the football. Miami, the Cam Ward era has begun. And if you were trying to temper expectations, it was a tough day for you because Cam Ward went 19 for 24, over 3 bills, and 3 touchdowns. He is verifiably an upgrade for you at the quarterback position. That's not me dunking on TVD. I'm just trying to tell you how it is right here. He is a better quarterback for you than you've had ever in the Mario Cristobal era in Coral Gables. So what does that mean? Well, it means if you were supposed to, I say supposed to, 7-5 last year, really should have been 8-4. It is what it is. If you're taking these steps as a football team, you now have a quarterback to equip you to take that next step. Now, he still has to do it. I thought there were a couple of times there where he made plays off schedule with, you know, the flip pass, you know, kind of shovel passing it when he's in pressure. Makes you a little bit nervous that you're ad-libbing that way during a spring game. But when he was on time and playing within the structure of this offense, he was dialed in. He had a day and a half when it came to what he did statistically. Talking about upgrades too, worth noting, last year Miami had a 3.5% interception rate. That means of all the passes they threw, 3.5% of those ended in an INT. That's good for 106th in the country. Cam Ward, much better when it comes to taking care of the football, throwing it downfield. Taking care of those fumbles, gotta alleviate that, but he's much better in that department. He threw for over 300, as I mentioned. Miami averaged 250 pass yards a game. Not bad, but again, Cam Ward, he is the upgrade in every single sense of the word. Good to see that translate during the spring game. Got to happen during the practice days before it happens on game day. So Miami, it's happening during the practice days. So far, so good. One more team to touch on here, Alabama. The Kalen DeBoer edge, I think, is going to be physical. People, you know, Nick Saban kind of had a brand of his own that he brought to the table in Tuscaloosa. They were smash mouth. They were push you around. You know, they had some, obviously, some really good quarterbacks there as well during Nick Saban's time. But I think the concern was Kalen DeBoer arrives in Tuscaloosa. He's known for throwing the football around the yard. Are we still going to be physical? Never mind that they won the Joe Moore Award last year at Washington for the best offensive line of the country. Are we still going to have that Bama edge to ourselves? Well, I think the thing that we can take away from the spring game is it's there if you want it. And based on how they ran the football, it's going to be there in the fall. They are legitimately 3 deep at running back between Jam Miller, who won A-Day MVP, and Justice Haynes, who was built like a truck and who we talked to Coach Kalen DeBoer about, and Richard Young, the young buck. All three of those cats, I think, can tote the mail for you at any given time during the course of the season. And being that deep at running back in the SEC is a non-negotiable if you want to play meaningful games well into December and obviously in the college football playoff. And if you want to win the SEC again, Kalen DeBoer's first year out there. So again, spring football, it's for taking a temperature, trying to gauge the symptoms. We're not trying to diagnose anything, just kind of get a symptom, figure out what you are in the spring and how that's going to translate when we get to the fall. But again, spring games round 2 is set for this upcoming Saturday. So very important now to be subscribed to the On3 YouTube channel because we will have immediate reactions for you as soon as we get some, as soon as we watch those, we'll have an instant reaction for you the morning after. So come hang out. We'll have a real good time. If you're watching right now on YouTube, we appreciate you. Make sure you like the video as we keep a good thing rolling. We got Pete Nakos set to join the show here in less than 15 minutes. We prefaced some of those big names in the portal. I didn't even get to all of them from that one segment. We just kind of went through the quick hitters. We'll talk to Pete a lot about the market in the transfer portal. We'll talk about how NIL dollars are being spent. We'll talk about positions that are in high demand. And also we'll get some intel on some of those names that we mentioned during that portal segment at the top of the show. So again, make sure you've liked the video and we'll keep a good thing going. Mentioned Alabama in our last segment from their A-Day. And as we moved from the A-Day and some time passed and we came in here on Sunday morning and did our reaction, and I thought more about it and I watched more Jalen Milroe and I thought more about the conversation we had with Kalen DeBoer. I think this offense is going to work. And I don't mean just work in the sense of, oh, it'll be serviceable. Jalen Milroe will be enough of what you need. Like, I think that this is offensively in Tuscaloosa a powder keg of an operation. And I think it could be dynamite when it comes to what they're going to do in the fall. Sometimes things that don't seem like they should go together come together and then just work beautifully. Because you look at Kalen DeBoer's offense and they threw the ball, again, I've said this a lot on this show, the last 4 years, they've thrown the ball north of 40 times a game. That's kind of been how they operate in Kalen DeBoer's offense. From Fresno State to Washington, And both those quarterbacks he's had, very different kind of players than a one Jalen Milroe. Jay Kanter, Michael Penix Jr., respectively. Jalen Milroe is a specimen. He's special when he runs the football. He's a good passer, but my concern was, how is that going to work? The best comparison I can make for how this is going to work in my mind, French fries and milkshakes. I'm from the West Coast, so In-N-Out's a staple out there. There are some folks that dip their French fry in their respective milkshake. It sounds gross, doesn't make sense, but when you actually try it for the first time, it's a beautiful thing. And it works perfectly. They complement each other just right. The salt, the sweetness from the shake, like it just, I can't explain it perfectly, but when you try it, when you see it, when you taste it, it's beautiful. So that's a weird enough comparison for us to jump into how Kalen DeBoer and Jalen Milroe are going to work together offensively. I had my questions going into this thing. I did, for reasons I already mentioned. But when we talk about this offense and the basics of it, I think it's going to play really well into the questions I had for Jalen Milroe. Because Jalen Milroe last year, I'll say it again, he was a good passer at multiple points. It just, he wasn't consistent in the throws you needed to be consistent at. Like that 10 to 15 yard range, I felt like there were opportunities that were left on the table for Alabama and for Jalen Milroe respectively. I want to make this clear to you as we jump into this. This is not a record or season prediction for Alabama. I'm not telling you they're winning the SEC. I'm not telling you Jalen Milroe is winning the Heisman Trophy. I'm just telling you this offense is going to score a lot of points. I think it'll be even better than it was a season ago. So going back to what I was saying, the base of this offense, some of the basics that it will implement, it's going to spread you out. Say, JD, no duh, it's a spread offense. They're going to spread you out. We watched the spring game too. What's important about that is as you align to spread out your offense, the defense has to honor that. They got to spread out with your playmakers. And so what they do pre-snap, in addition to that, is Kalen DeBoer does a lot of pre-snap movement. And he doesn't just, you know, do the jet motion across the formation. He'll do some of that. What they do a lot at Washington a season ago that you saw, they would shift the formation of their wide receivers really close to the snap. And what that does for a defense is we have to communicate and realign to what you just did offensively. Pretty straightforward. If the offense adjusts, more often than not, the defense has to adjust with them. When you change your plan, we have to change our plan. And the reason why that's important, the greater amount of times that we make you change your plan, the more times you have to communicate, the more times you have to realign. And that just causes a greater potential for you to misalign, for you to miscommunicate, for you to, at the very least, have to simplify your plan defensively. All of those things favor us as the offense. All of those things favor Jalen Milroe. So what I think that's going to make for happening is a lot of what I would call real estate throws. Like before the snap, I know if I'm number four back there playing quarterback, by nature of how they just aligned to what we did pre-snap, I got an easy access throw. I got that six-yard hitch route. I got that in route. I know where I'm going with the football before this play even starts. What they're not going to ask him to do is make a bunch of NFL throws. Hey, Jalen, layer that football over the linebacker in front of the safety and just past the corner. He may have some plays where he has to do that, but that's not going to be who he is throughout the duration of this season. They're going to give him, again, easy access throws, consistently repeatable throws that are going to be easy yardage and set up good situations for the offense. So in addition to that, another layer of that is the ability to push the ball deep. Like when you have to miss a line or if you have to spread out and you get the matchup you want, that's when the deep ball starts to kick in. That's when we can really start just tossing missiles at you and scoring big touchdowns. And that's the thing that I think people saw last year from Michael Penix Jr. And he did that at, I think, at the highest level I saw last year in the college game. But it's important to remember now, Jalen Milroe has that in the bag too. Like for all the things that Alabama fans will tell you about Jalen Milroe, one of the gripes they won't have with him is his ability to throw the deep ball. There was a point last year where I think he was like 70% when it came to passes over 20 yards. Dude is accurate when it comes to throwing the deep ball. So all that's to say, what Michael Penix Jr. did at an elite level last year, Jalen Milroe, from what I saw, already does that well. It's not going to be this massive learning curve of, okay, can you throw the deep ball, Jalen? No, he can. Offense is going to allow him to have some of those shots. He'll take them. They'll make a fair amount of them. Pretty straightforward. Now, here's the important part about this when it comes to Jalen Milroe fitting in this offense. As you stretch out a defense by how you align, the best way to say this is it makes the defense thin at a lot of levels. There's not a lot of backup plans for all those gaps and all those lanes when it comes to running or passing. You don't have a lot of two guys, you have a first line of defense and a second line of defense. It's usually a lot of just across the board. We're pretty thin. Here's the thing about thin things. Thin things tend to be fragile. They tend to break more easily. And so if you give us a thin defense, there's probably going to be some lanes for Jalen Milroe to take advantage of with his legs. And that's kind of the secret sauce here that's hard to define. They're going to play to his skill set. They will, I promise you. You're not going to trot Jalen Milroe out there at quarterback and have no plan to take advantage of his legs. We didn't really see that during the spring game because Kalen DeBoer told us we're just installing the base offense. We'll get into the fall and we'll start to play a little bit more to those strengths. But at the end of the day, if you're going to make the defense thin, and I got a quarterback that can hurt you when you are thin defensively, think about the LSU game, that's when we really start cooking. That's when that secret sauce, that unquantifiable quality that he has, really starts to hurt you and take shape and cause you to score a lot of touchdowns. So that's the crazy part about this. There's some of this that we can't really trace back with Kalen DeBoer from different stops. There's some things that he just is going through at Alabama that he didn't do at Fresno State, didn't do at Washington. He's going to kind of have to adapt to Jalen Milroe. But all things considered, they're going to set him up for success. They're not going to ask him to do things that he doesn't do well. And there's a lot of things that Jalen Milroe does do well, for the record. Last part of this, is kind of a little subplot within this whole thought around Alabama's offense being extremely potent. The playmakers for Alabama have to do their part. As much praise as Michael Penix Jr. got last year, as much of it was deserved because he was on fire last year, they had some dogs on the perimeter. I mean, Jalen McMillan, Jalen Polk, Roma Dunze, a lot of guys that won their matchups and won contested footballs in the air for their quarterback. I'm not saying you got to have three NFL wide receivers if you're Alabama, but I do think you got to have a couple guys step up and make plays for their quarterback and make the defense nervous they're going to make plays for their quarterback. Jeremy Bernard, transfer from Washington to Alabama, is the guy I'm watching most closely. He had a great spring game. I think he had three catches and north of 100 yards. Had a nice little a couple highlight plays where he caught one over the middle. There was a deep post that was contested. He came down with it. Caught a deep crossing pattern from Jalen Milroe that I think was probably the play of the A-Day if you're a Jalen Milroe stan. All that's to say, they got a good basis for that, I think, at that wide receiver room. But as this portal's open up now, keep an eye on Alabama and that wide receiver market. I think they're going to be aggressive just in the portal period, but I'm very curious to see what the wide receiver market looks like and how aggressive they are on that front, because I think they're going to add some playmakers. So with that being said, Jalen Milroe, going to be a stud for you. Truly believe that. Going to be a stud for you. And Alabama offensively will be extremely potent. I've seen the light. There's no way around it. I've seen the light. I'm a believer in Jalen Milroe. I'm a believer in that Bama offense. The one governor I'm watching here is how much that defense is able to hold up their end of the bargain. Probably another segment for another time, but we are believers in Jalen Milroe. We're buying stock and feeling pretty good about doing so. All right. Portal Pete. Pete Naik is about to join the show here. And give or take 5 or so minutes. Before we get to him, though, I want us to have a conversation together about the Ohio State Buckeye quarterback room. Because if you tuned into spring games this past Saturday, there was like 80,000, I believe, in the shoe. It was absolutely electric to watch, even from the comfort of my own living room and seeing Fox do an awesome production for that. I think that Ohio State, when it comes to their quarterback room, is in a very intriguing position, but I think the answer is actually pretty straightforward when it comes to who's going to be the starting quarterback. You got options, though. To quote Jack Harlow, you got options, all right? So I think they have legitimately three different individuals who could probably all play somewhere tomorrow within that quarterback room. Maybe four, depending on how you feel about Lincoln Kienholz and Julian Sain. But Devin Brown, I think, had a really good spring game. Just full transparency, I'm a Devin Brown guy. I think that he's kind of gotten a bad rap since getting to Ohio State. Last year, you heard a lot about his playmaking ability and what he could do behind closed doors. Made it a battle of sorts. It went all the way into the fall for Ryan Day and Kyle McCord, but like at the end of the day, wasn't ready to play. It's okay. It's not a sin to not be ready to play at Ohio State when you have a guy who's been there longer than you in front of you. It is what it is. Played in the game against Missouri. I was really hoping we'd get to see what he could do in that game. Unfortunately, gets hurt, and Ohio State doesn't have their best showing. Worth noting they were without their best wide receiver in that game too, Marvin Harrison Jr., but I digress. Julian Sain, you've heard a lot of buzz around him. One of the top quarterbacks from 2024, enrolled early at Alabama. Nick Saban retires. He transfers short-term signee style to Columbus. And he's made some real noise during spring ball. And there's a reason for that. Like, you don't hear true freshmen around, you know, that program having the buzz that they have for no reason, just to kind of pump up a true freshman. They got options in that quarterback room. And I think it's worth noting, too, Julian Sain getting reps in the first half of that football game should tell you a lot about the kind of spring game that he had, or the kind of spring, rather, that he had. Now, speaking of the spring game, there's a lot of hype, a lot of expectations. People are talking about him. Ryan Day is talking about him being in the mix for that quarterback position. Overall, you kind of saw him look like a freshman in that spring game, and he's a talented true freshman. He looked that way in the spring game, and it's hard to fault him for his first action in front of 80,000 people, not lighting the world on fire. Will Howard, transferring over from Kansas State in that first portal window, his resume speaks for itself, right? His resume and what he did at Kansas State and the Big 12 title he has to his name tells you a lot about the kind of player he is. And so when people talk about the Ohio State quarterback room, I think the anti-Buckeye folks from other fan bases will say, well, why is it taking so long? Thought you had your guy in the transfer portal that you already snagged with Will Howard. We're sitting here after 15 practices. You got Chip Kelly running the show. You don't have a quarterback yet? Do you not have a good option? I think what most Buckeye fans would respond to that is, well, hey, this is how Ryan Day does things, all right? Ryan Day doesn't name a starting quarterback after spring practice. Even when it was Justin Fields and pretty much everyone and their mama knew he was going to be the guy, he was not announced as the starter until mid-August. C.J. Stroud, same deal. You knew what he was. You knew what he was bringing to the table. You knew his ability. You knew how highly touted he was out of high school. There wasn't really a strong number two option for you there that you felt like was going to beat him out. He wasn't named till fall camp as the starter. So what I'm trying to say here is, it was 15 practices. I'm not overly concerned if a guy hasn't grabbed the job by the throat just yet. It's not how things have gone at Ohio State. Typically, goes into fall camp. Heck, last year with Ryan, with Kyle McCord and Devin Brown, Ryan Day took a couple of games to name the starter. So they typically will let things bake a little bit longer, play the long game, and eventually name a starter when they get further and further closer to the season. Now, you want a guy to win the job, and I think it's also worth mentioning here, Chip Kelly, he's the new offensive coordinator. He's working with the quarterbacks. He's only been there for 15 practices. He's still getting a gauge for everyone in that room. So the fact they haven't named a starter should not be concerning. I don't think Buckeye fans are concerned, and I think all the noise you hear around that is, it's just bitter people saying bitter things, to be honest. So when we talk about Ohio State going forward now in the quarterback room, I told you at the top of this thing, I think there's an answer there. I think they know where they're going, and I think it's Will Howard until it's not. That's no shade on Devin Brown or on Julian Sain, but like, let's just be real here. Devin Brown has been in that team for a while. Julian Sain is a true freshman. If Devin Brown was your guy, I don't think you go out and grab a Will Howard. If Julian Sain was going to win the job, I don't think that was going to be something that you probably were leaning on going towards anyway. It would have been an uphill battle for him to somehow win the job, period. The thing with Will Howard that should be encouraging for Buckeye fans is you know what you're getting with him. He's got a four-year resume when it comes to what he's done at the collegiate level. You're not guessing about who he's going to be when the lights come on. And that's important for Buckeye fans, man, because with how good this roster is, with what you have in the backfield, with what you have at the wide receiver position, you don't need to hope that your quarterback can get it done. You need the smallest degree of variance as possible playing quarterback for you to drive this Ferrari. Now, Kyle McCord last year, you felt like maybe was a little bit more of a game manager than you would have liked with how potent that offense could have been. I think Will Howard brings more to the table with his legs and pushing the ball downfield and the experience. All those things factor into him being the right guy for you at Ohio State. All right, worth noting too, because he hasn't won the job yet, it's been 15 practices, he's also acclimating. He's also getting up to steam. But whoever takes that quarterback job, I believe it's Will Howard, they're set up for success, like I alluded to a second ago. That running back room, Trayvon Henderson, Quinshon Judkins, those are some guys you want to hand the football to consistently and set you up a lot in second and four and third and one. Like, that's a good place to be. Emeka Ebuka, he's a 1,000-yard receiver when he's healthy. Jeremiah Smith, like a LeBron James comp during the spring game broadcast. That doesn't even make sense, but that tells you how highly people think of him within that program and on the outside looking in from what they've heard about him. Ryan Day, whoever he starts at quarterback, again, I think it's Will Howard, but if there's any pushback on who folks believe should be the starter or isn't named the starter, like, just understand now, Ryan Day and the pressure he has on him to beat Michigan this year, he's making a calculated bet with who he names a starting quarterback, they're going to be the guy to beat Michigan. So I promise you, as much as Buckeye Nation cares about who's the starting quarterback and how strongly they feel, I promise you, Ryan Day feels 10x those emotions and 10x that pressure. So I think it's Will Howard. To recap it for you here, if you felt like you had an answer in the room or you thought you were going to play somebody else, you wouldn't go out and get a Will Howard. You had your starting quarterback coming back from last season if you wanted to. They're pushing the envelope. I think Will Howard presents the smallest degree of risk for you, and I'm excited to watch what the Buckeyes do here in 2024. I would expect, again, I'm making a prediction here, I expect Ohio State to name their starting quarterback, true to Ryan Day's routine, sometime in August, and I'd be wildly surprised if it's not Will Howard. So we'll keep an eye on that, but I think, I mean, let's just say this, Will Howard had a lot of suitors coming out of the portal. A lot of folks wanted his services, and not a little deal that Ohio State was able to land him. Speaking of the portal, man, we got a lot of things going on right now. And I promise you, there's nobody that has more things going on than Pete Nakos, who is all everything reporter here for us at On3. I call him Portal Pete. Welcome now to the show to present some intel, present his insight, and just bring the juice, period. Pete Nakos. Pete, what's going on, man? Are you sleeping at all? Did you get any REM last night, or are we just jumping right into it? Portal season started at midnight Eastern.
I stayed up till 12:30 with the hope someone would go in the portal. And shout out to my Minnesota walk-on guy who went in. He kind of made it feel worth it. And then I was up at 5:30 waiting for some random compliance department to kick things off. And the Indiana compliance department delivered at like 6:45. But here we are. We're ready to rock and roll. Talk some transfer portal. Let's get going.
Let's go, baby. How about that? Indiana starting us off strong, man. Well, I mean, I want to start right there. Has anything happened in the last, like, 40 minutes? I haven't checked my computer. I was assuming there'd be a steady influx of names. Anything outside of Caden Proctor? I see we got some – I just refreshed my Twitter screen that was on the On3 Twitter account. You got a report with some Keandre Lambert-Smith news. What's the latest there?
Yeah, so Keandre Lambert-Smith is the Penn State grad transfer wide receiver, led the Nittany Lions in catches a year ago, went in the transfer portal yesterday, reported this past Friday that he was expected to go in, and just talking to someone close to Keandre who knows the situation, was told that Georgia, West Virginia, Texas A&M, Auburn, and Colorado are some of the first teams who have contacted him in the first 24 hours, and he's automatically the best available wide receiver in the portal. He has a ton of upside. He also has 1 year of eligibility remaining, and really can come in and be wide receiver one, I think, for a lot of programs. And when you look across the board, wide receiver is pretty high on some of the needs for some of the top teams in the country. And yeah, I think he's the kind of guy who's going to be able to pick where he wants to go. At the same time, he's obviously going to want to go to a place that has a proven quarterback where he knows that the ball is going to get thrown his way quite a bit, and feels like he can contend for a CFP berth, right? And that's what he was trying to do at Penn State, and that's where he's going to look now.
I'm really curious to see where he ends up, man. That's a pretty high-profile list of schools that you just mentioned there. I'm really curious about what Auburn does in the portal. I want to talk about portal players here in a second, but you mentioned the position market and how it fluctuates from running back to the trenches to even quarterback from different, you know, portal windows and portal cycles. What are some of the positions that you're watching most closely and that are going to be in the highest demand? Because you talked about it in one of your most recent articles on on3.com, kind of a portal primer for the folks. What are the positions that are going to be hot commodities this cycle?
Yeah, running back is really high up there right now for a lot of programs, right? Just a proven veteran rusher who can come back in and really make an impact in the running game really quickly. Programs can never have too many linemen. They'll tell you that whenever you talk to them. So definitely a premium in the trenches. And You know, I think when you talk about the spring transfer portal window, the way I look at it and a lot of coaching staffs do is, right, December is to restock the talent pool. April is kind of this time to really go through with a fine-tooth comb and just try to figure out, okay, do I need more depth on the line? Do I need a running back who can make an instant impact? Those little spots like that are that this is the time to do that. This is the last time you can do it before fall and the season really gets going. The one other position I've heard a lot about, JD, everybody right now kind of seems to like they would love to have a great linebacker, but there are not like there's some really good linebackers out there, but no one's really heard of any really good ones going in the portal just yet. So that will be one thing to keep an eye on. I would expect if I'm not going to name any names, but if someone with a really good resume jumps in, I would imagine that their recruitment is going to be pretty high profile.
That's so fascinating. Is it a thing where kind of similar to the offensive line and defensive line, just the physicality and the duration of a season now is causing that to be like a higher demand position with this expanded playoff and just longer season period? Is that kind of the way this is trending?
Yeah, you know, I think you're right on that. If you want to win a national championship now, like you mentioned, you got to play 17 games. And I think that kind of adds up over time. And at the same thing, too, like you want a defense that week in, week out can deliver. And you know this just as well as I do, but you need the depth.
Yeah, it's just it's a wild time right now to be looking for some extra talent. And I think the narrative across the college football public was like, hey, buckle up, going to be the craziest portal cycle we've seen. And it might still be crazy. I mean, I don't want to just totally throw that thought away, but it, kind of what you said, it seems like this is sort of that time of year where teams are looking to add depth as opposed to adding like a top 5% or kind of player in the country. Is that, am I on the ball there, or is it going to be a thing where we see some big names pop up here after that second round of spring games and some big names jump in there?
You know, I think that overall this talent pool is not going to be comparable to what we've seen in the wintertime. That said, I think that this is going to be a slow burn. There's a lot of big programs that don't have spring games until this upcoming weekend, Michigan, Texas, among others. I'm not expecting there to be like a power four starting quarterback to jump in. If that gives you a little bit more context.
Yeah. It seemed like obviously like last year. Sorry, I cut you off there, Pete. Go ahead.
No, you're all good. I was just saying, obviously we can be surprised, but at this point I just don't expect that.
Yeah. Like last year, it kind of felt like you saw some of those guys at, you know, quote unquote lesser schools like Cam Ward at Washington State. And you're like, okay, maybe he's one to keep an eye on. You'd have to believe the demand will be pretty high, but you were talking about with me when we, you know, we're discussing this whole thing leading up to this portal cycle, backup quarterback kind of having a little bit more buzz. I mentioned Nick Evers earlier in the show, Jacoby Criswell earlier in the show, two guys that, you know, were 4-star recruits at their respective classes. Is it a backup quarterback market for the most part this spring, Pete? And are they drawing some pretty good NIL attraction on that front?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a backup quarterback market. I think what people need to consider too is when you see a Nick Evers or Jacoby Criswell go in, everyone is like, okay, they're going to a G5 school, and they may as well. I mean, they're very talented quarterbacks who can do a lot for a program. But at the same time, I think we need to see how the backup quarterback market kind of like shuffles itself out right now, JD, right? Ohio State and Alabama have some of the deeper quarterback rooms, but what if two of those guys leave? I mean, Nick Evers and Jacoby Criswell are really talented guys who could easily step in and compete for a backup job right away at one of those programs, maybe. And I wouldn't expect decisions from them immediately.
Yeah, I'm watching Michigan, man. I'm just so fascinated to watch their spring game that's coming up and see where they're at the quarterback position, because as much as they have some unproven production that's returning, they still have a lot of pieces where it's like, hey, if you got some of these guys back, like a Colston Loveland, like a Will Johnson, like a Kenneth Grant, like might as well go get a quarterback that can capitalize on that much talent and go try and make a run at a back-to-back national title kind of thing. Is Michigan to be in the portal quarterback market you're just estimating here, or what's the latest when it comes to how that could shake out for a team like Michigan?
I think that Michigan is going to be in the quarterback market if the right quarterback jumps in the portal. I think they really like Alex Orji. I think that Sharon Moore is really handling this well and realizes that he can't lose his entire quarterback room just to add in one guy. I think Jaden Davis has a lot of upside. I think they're trying to handle that delicately. And it's going to be something to monitor throughout the next few weeks, but by no means do I think it's if someone goes in there immediately going, I think it has to be the right fit in the right timing.
No, I mean, that makes sense. When you talk about other teams, though, that could be going into attack mode, this transfer portal cycle, any names that you're consistently hearing from a program perspective?
Yeah, Washington, Alabama, Michigan would really love to add some wide receivers, I know. So, like, that kind of group of schools that were really impacted by Nick Saban's decision to retire are the programs I'm keeping an eye on. And then you always have to bring it up, but Colorado lost like six guys in the portal this morning. Like, I think Deion Sanders and crew are going to have to dip into the portal to field a complete 85-man roster.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to watch Colorado because this time last year it was like a lot of names were popping up, and then it came out, well, hey, we were told we didn't have a spot anymore. You know, Coach Prime is kind of letting us know where we stand, and we're not on the roster anymore, so we're jumping in the portal. Curious how much of that goes on, and curious how many of those guys are leaving on their own accord. Last question for you, Pete. When it comes to the NIL market, if I'm a big boy and I can play offensive or defensive line, and I'm about my money, I might think about holding out until this spring window to maximize my my dollar amount. Is that something that's happening? I mean, is it just the offensive and defensive line is demanding the most capital, or what position groups in your mind are going to be the high-priced items?
Yeah, I think you hit it right on. I think that the linemen are definitely going to be some of the most sought after, and because of that, they'll probably have a good premium attached to them. So, yeah, I think you're probably onto something if you're a lineman who's really talented who might wait out for the spring portal, because – I can almost guarantee you, you're going to have a pretty good line of suitors the minute you jump in.
Golly, man. I'm like, as you're on the screen, I'm like scrolling the socials to make sure I'm not missing someone that's jumped in that I want to ask you about. Anything that you think we need to keep our head in the swivel for, Pete? I mean, just open floor here. Any wise words from Portal Pete?
The one thing I would tell everyone to just keep an eye on, and this isn't like overly insightful, but because of the nature of college sports right now, JD, and you and I have talked about it so much, we could see an athlete threaten to go in the portal and then maybe stay because they get a couple extra dollars. Or we could see an athlete we never saw go in the portal because they weren't fully paid out the money they were promised. So while we sit here and talk about, like, maybe we don't see a power forward starting quarterback go in, just remember, if we do see a couple surprises, the context really matters. And NIL isn't everything, but it definitely has an impact on the portal.
Head on a swivel. It's portal season, baby. It's portal season. Hey, make sure you're following Pete Nakos to stay up to date for all things transfer portal. Extremely critical all year round, but especially right now. Pete, caffeine source, are you a coffee guy? Are we going 5-hour energy? Are you caffeine pills? Like, what's the sustenance to keep you rolling right now, man? What's the fuel?
You know, I drink coffee. I know Trey Yannity is offering me some caffeine pills from time to time, your producer, but yeah, I'm passing on those at the moment.
Okay, well, hey, you know, try anything once, twice if you like it. That's all I'll say. Pete, thanks for making time, and very, very excited to tune in with you here throughout the course of this portal cycle.
Sounds great, man. Thanks so much, JD. Have a great day.
Pete Nakos, baby. Portal Pete, I'm telling you. Notifications on, follow him on Twitter, all the socials. Make sure you are dialed in. Extremely, extremely critical. Like I said, all year round, but right now, especially, as I keep a side eye for those of y'all watching live on YouTube, to the social channels to make sure we don't miss something that happens when it comes to the portal. Okay, so in a matter of moments here, going to get to your questions. Got time for a few of those from this live chat. Nick Brake will join the show in a matter of moments. But I thought that it would be appropriate for us as we enter into transfer portal season, as recruiting kind of gets some steam at the high school level, we're playing spring games, I thought it would be best for us to, as a college football community, have a look in the mirror moment and just say, you know what, yeah, we are a little bit toxic. Nothing wrong with that. We all have a little bit of toxic traits to us, but what, as college football fans, do we specifically do that we can laugh at ourselves and laugh at maybe your buddy who does this, and it's just a little bit overkill. The first thing that I think that we do, man, as college football fans, we're great at this, we love piecing back together the previous season with an alternate reality. Like, it's always, hey, if this one play went differently, and I've done this on this show for a couple of different teams because I think there's some salt to it, but there's some guys that will take a 5-7 season and talk themselves into how they could have been 9-3. and how they maybe should have been 9-3. Hey, if that field goal goes in, we beat that team, we get some momentum, we get some confidence. Our quarterback probably plays better because he got a win instead of a loss. He starts throwing darts. We beat that next team. We go on a hot streak like, hey, man, maybe that's the case, but it's a little bit more likely that your defensive line just couldn't stop anybody, and that's why y'all missed a bowl game. I'm not naming a specific team because I don't have one in mind, but I'm telling you, as toxic college football fans, we're guilty of this. It's great. It's what we do. But just keep an eye on that when it comes to the self-evals this spring. Another thing here when it comes to how toxic we are as college football fans, this is like legitimately toxic. There's always that recruit that you were in the top 2-4, top 3-4. Maybe if you're really ambitious, you were in the top 5 of the Hayes Fawcett graphic that dropped for that kid, and then he narrows down his list, you're not in that top 3. Or he doesn't pick you when it comes to landing that that commitment when he grabs the hat on signing day. And the thing that you hear a lot is, kid wasn't a take. Hey, he didn't, you know why he didn't commit to us? Because he wasn't going to play. He didn't commit to us because we actually didn't have an offer for him on signing day. I'm not telling you that isn't true like some small percentage of the time, but for the most part, man, the kid just made a decision best for him and his family. Was NIL a factor? Yeah, maybe. Probably was when it comes to what today is in college football and how the recruiting landscape works, but there's always this thought of, man, hey, we didn't want him. We broke up with them. They didn't break up with us. We were always going to be good whether we landed that 5-star recruit or not. Crazy. Crazy how that works. NIL kind of factored into that. This is kind of a new one that we do as college football fans. Hey, school X just dropped a bag. No, he wanted to come to us, mom and dad. We saw him wearing our gear over the course of this past weekend on the socials, and we feel like he was coming to us, man. But at the 11th hour, so-and-so came through and dropped a bag. Let me be clear. That does happen. Bags being dropped in the NIL world, it's a reality. But the thing that I don't understand now, and the thing why it's toxic, is because when you complain about a bag being dropped and being outbid by another school, that means, one, it was a matter of money. Two, because it was a matter of money and they had more than you and you weren't willing to spend to land that recruit, what are we talking about? What are we arguing? What are we complaining about here? It was a matter of money. You didn't meet the price point. That other school did. It is what it is. Just because you didn't pony up for the 5-star recruit doesn't mean you get to be salty that someone else did, man. That's capitalism, right? Or I think it's capitalism. Free market. It is what it is. Let's not complain about that. That's toxic. Last couple to get to here. Folks that question the play calling / the demeanor of the coach, toxic. Toxic. And I get it. It's human nature. We're sitting here as fans. We're not playing on Saturdays. We can only affect the outcome so much, so we got to look to somebody to blame. And the thing that is just wild is, hey, why did they call that play? Hasn't worked all year long. You might have a point there. It might have not worked, but that coach or that coordinator has dedicated probably 80 hours during the course of that week to be best informed and best positioned to make the right call for that specific moment. So if you think someone else would have worked, yeah, probably so. Maybe so. I think you can have a point there that play against that defense didn't work. But at the same time, man, you haven't put in the work. You haven't put in the 100 hours during the week to be able to call that play for that coach. He has. He's got all the information and then some. He knows his team. So calling the plays from the couch, man, I get it. I've done it before too, but it's toxic. It's not something we need to really take part in as college football fans. And also, it's just kind of a bad look, if we're going to be honest here. Last thing, questioning the demeanor, as I mentioned a second ago, toxic. Toxic, 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 man, because the thing is, a coach's demeanor is always viewed through the lens of how well that football team is doing. Baylor's Dave Aranda is a perfect example of this. When I was in Waco and was covering Baylor, I think it was during the COVID season, won like 2 games. It was bad. It was very bad. And everybody is like, man, Dave Aranda, he's just not emotional enough. He's not fiery enough. He doesn't have the juice and the leadership it takes to win football games here in this power conference that is the Big 12. Doesn't have it. Wish he did, but doesn't have it. He's not a leader. Players don't respond to it. And then you fast forward the tape. 1 year later, they win the Big 12 title, and everyone's perspective on Dave Aranda had totally flipped. He's stoic, man. Hey, you see, on the very last play there on that goal line stand, he didn't even flinch. They poured Gatorade on him. He didn't even crack a smile. Like, he's just, he's even keel. He's unflappable. He's stoic. That's why he's such a good coach. You win, you're stoic. You lose, you're soft, you're unemotional. Dabo's a great example, too. You win, you do things your own way. You're a culture guy. You're fun to be around. The players love you. You lose, you're corny. You're out of touch. Like, question the demeanor. Toxic. But it is what it is. We're human. We're college football fans. We're one of a kind. And nothing like college football. Nothing like college football community as a whole that we're glad to be a part of. And we're glad that y'all are a part of here. All right, so let's get to y'all's questions now. Here, got time for probably three of these. The man producing this entire show, the man responsible for everything happening that you're seeing here on the YouTube screen and you're listening to via podcast, Nick Brake. Nick, what's going on, baby? What's going on in the chat today? We got some good fodder, some good banter?
Got some good questions, too. I don't want to waste any time.
I love it.
The truth says, you know, if Iowa can be a top 50 offense here this season, how good can they be in general?
Whoa. If Iowa could be a top 50 offense... If Iowa could be a top 50 offense, Cade McNamara probably put it together and was throwing it around the yard. They'll be in that Big Ten title conversation. They'll be in that college football playoff conversation. I don't think they win the Big Ten. I don't think they have enough roster talent to get that done. But I do think that they would probably ruin somebody's chances of getting to Indy. So I like that question. That's a great one. Iowa top 50 offense. They would throw parades. They would throw parades on campus there if they got that done.
This question from Ferris says, did Ryan Day make a mistake by having one freshman quarterback with no black stripe and the other with a black stripe? Not a great political move by the coach, in Ferris's opinion.
Ferris, appreciate that. I see where you're coming from. You're like, hey, we got two freshman quarterbacks and one lost his black stripe. You're clearly favoring one of those quarterbacks. For those of y'all that are listening and don't know what I'm talking about with the black stripe, really quickly, losing your black stripe on your helmet is essentially your rite of passage. It means you've done things the right way on the field and off the field, and you've progressed to the point where you can be officially considered a Buckeye. Julian Sain lost his black stripe pretty early in the spring. Aaron Nolan still hasn't lost it. That doesn't mean that Aaron Nolan's not going to still have a great career at Ohio State. It's not meaning that Julian Sain's going to play before Aaron Nolan either, but it does mean that Julian Sain has done enough in practice during the spring. And I guess based on how you're defining this thing, I guess he's done enough off the field to be considered a Buckeye. Aaron Nolan could still be that. He's just at this point in time, whether it's behind closed doors with spring practice or something else, he hasn't done enough to be considered a Buckeye and lose that black stripe. So I'm not worried. I don't think there's any politics. I think it's all about their standards internally, and Julian Sain has met those, and Aaron Nolan is still acclimating and still getting there. So I don't have any issue with it. It is what it is. More power to Ryan Day, and good for Julian Sain.
Sydney wants an early prediction for Auburn-Alabama this year. Any chance Alabama or Auburn can win?
There's a chance. There's definitely a chance. I would probably lean Alabama right now. But Auburn, man, with how close they played them, I wonder if they're able to bottle that up and take it to Tuscaloosa, because I think playing in Jordan-Hare probably played a pretty big factor in that game. But also, Peyton Thorne did not have a great day at the office when it came to throwing the football downfield. Is he able to progress, and is he a better version of himself in that game this year? Does that make the difference? I don't know. The offense played well enough to win that game last year. Make no mistake. Peyton Thorne, Jarquez Hunter, they weren't out there for 4th-and-31. That defense was, and that defense I think will be improved even more under DJ Durkin. So it's definitely possible. Obviously, with the context we have now, it's tough to predict. I'd probably lean Alabama right now with it being in Tuscaloosa, but of course, we will give you a prediction and we'll break it down when it comes time for that game to be played. Nick Brake, man, anything you want to leave the people with? Any break bites?
I yield my comments to one question because they were asking a lot of times. Heavier says, what teams are you most excited to watch this season and why?
Dude, you're the people's champ. We say, Nick, what do you think? You're like, ask the people what they think. Team most excited to watch? I am. To narrow it down to one is tough. I'll give you a player, and I'll give you a team. I think player, Nico Iamaliava, his potential, his physical tools, seeing him practice, like, that dude is special. And with how much pressure he has on his shoulders and how good he could allow Tennessee to be, you know, pretty potent stuff, he could change the complexion of who wins the SEC. Period. Mic drop the end. Team I'm most excited to see in 2024, man, I'm excited to see Auburn. I know we just talked about them, but getting to go out to visit that facility and visit with Coach Freeze and see how they ran practice. Like, everything about what they're doing just feels big time. It feels put together. It feels like there's a clear direction. And it's tough to quantify. A feeling, obviously, is tough to put into words and allocate that to a number of wins. But I really believe that the more you do the right things behind closed doors and the more you do the right things structurally, the right input creates the right output. And I feel like Auburn's really put together a phenomenal input when it comes to what they've done this offseason and what they're doing during the spring. Hugh Freeze calling the offense too. Could be a game changer when it comes to Peyton Thorne and his progress. Also, Cam Coleman is a one of one. So he'll be awesome this year too.
Yep.
How about Javier?
Yeah. Shout out Javier.
Nick is the GOAT.
Also, shout out Dezu. Shout out me.
Dude, it's like.
Back at you.
It's the Nick Break fan club in there, bro.
Sometimes.
I love it.
Sometimes. Yep.
Fickle.
Sometimes.
Fickle as it all. Luke Fickle as it always is.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We need to get Luke Fickle back on the show. Nick, you're the man, bro. We'll do it again same time tomorrow.
Same time. See you, man.
Nick Break holding it down. We appreciate y'all getting in the live chat. Hey, tomorrow, more portal talk. We will have transfer portal needs for your team. We'll talk through some contenders. There's an article out right now on on3.com from Jesse Simonton. I keep saying this, man. Follow Jesse Simonton. We're going to get him on the show here in the near future to just talk some ball before the season gets started. But go read that article. Phenomenal content. He's delivering heaters all offseason long, so dial in with him, and we'll break down some of our thoughts on that topic tomorrow. Hey, glad to have y'all here. We do not take this for granted, even for a second. So grateful that y'all take the time to come hang out with us and talk about the greatest sport on the face of the planet. It is, of course, college football. This community is what makes it special. We really appreciate y'all, all right? So make sure you're subscribed on the way out to be a part of this thing. We love y'all. We appreciate y'all. We're going to keep this party rolling, and we will see y'all next time.